Welcome to the late edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on July. Are we in the 14th or the 15th? I'm a little bit confused today. Looks like it's Thursday the 14th, I guess. This is your host, Bathrobe Spear Robert Norris, here a little bit late from San Francisco, but here nonetheless. I apologize for the last half hour's worth of music. I didn't choose it, but hey, maybe it'll be a nice counterpoint to all the babble that you're about to hear. We're going to be discussing the sleeping van and what happened to it at City Council. Tuned to 96.3 FM Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Civil Rights Time, and hopefully time for you to join in the general merriment. There's not a lot to be merry about today, but hey, if you're alive and breathing, that's something, and if you're indoors and have got a bed, that's something else. And I guess if you're at liberty and you're outdoors, that's something further. We've got an incoming call. Boy, I'm glad that folks are listening. I had hoped to be here earlier. I was afraid no one is listening. Let's see who we got calling in here. Hi, you're on free radio.
Hi, anyone? Hispanic?
Sorry?
Hispanic, please?
You're calling Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
What are you looking for?
Rock and roll?
No, this is a civil rights show. This is a talk show you've tuned into. Got any opinions on the rights of poor people? Hey, we're interested in talking, but we're not the rock show.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, but there's plenty of music on Free Radio Santa Cruz much of the time, and occasionally we even do a little music on this particular portion, but I don't know about today. The big things we're going to be covering in the next, I guess we got 90 minutes, a little less than 90 minutes here. We're going to be covering the City Council's Tuesday evening fiasco, which has been to some extent covered in the Chronicle today, Mercury News today, and the Sentinel yesterday. I think the Metro may be doing something next week, and Good Times will be doing something next week. Hope to cue up a few tapes to give you the sense of what the City Council did do, or the doo-doo that they did do. The issue, of course, is the right of homeless people to be able to sleep somewhere legally. That has been a point of protest and is going to continue to be a point of protest, I imagine, for some time to come, since City Council did nothing at all to ensure that there would be illegal places for homeless people to sleep. In a city of, I guess, 55,000 is what the new total is, I noticed as I drove back into town. And the number of homeless people, approximately 700 to 1,500, it's hard to estimate. I guess there will be a census coming out soon. We can get some more specific numbers. The significant number, though, is that there are 80 to 95% of them, well, 97% or more, are in an illegal status after 11 o'clock, will be tonight, and are every night, thanks to a restrictive code passed back in 1978 called the Camping Ordinance, and a particular part of that Camping Ordinance is called the Sleeping Ban. That's the first part of the Camping Ordinance, 6.36.010A, for all of you legal scholars. That's a law that makes it illegal to sleep either outside or in a vehicle, or actually in any structure in town that's not a domicile. So fall asleep in a movie theater, fall asleep in any non-hotel, fall asleep in a church, as many people do I should say a certain number of people do, a small number of people do, who are in the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program. That is illegal behavior in the city of Santa Cruz. Of course, obviously they don't push it unless you're not part of the official program and the police want to push it, as they did back in 1988 with the Red Calvary Episcopal Church, when the management there was allowing homeless people to sleep on the grounds and then inside the church. Church was, of course, approached by officers who threatened to arrest the people inside the church. Now, that was 12 years ago, and I haven't heard of any incidents happening recently around that. In fact, more sadly, I haven't heard of any instances of churches expanding their programs to allow more people to, let's say, park in their parking lots, which I would imagine are generally empty at night. There has been an exception to the sleeping ban, which says that if you are in a vehicle and you are only three vehicles on that parking lot, church can give you permission to be there for as long as they want. And some churches do sparingly to some people, but it's never been more than a handful, even though we have, I think, a significant number of churches in Santa Cruz city limits. Similarly, businesses, as of 1999, in the February amendments passed by the generous Catherine Byers and her city council majority, allow two vehicles per business parking lot. And again, I don't know, have no stats on how many businesses allow that, but I don't hear that many do. Of course, I tend to talk to people who are harassed by police, who face difficulties, although I also talk to people generally, and I haven't heard about a lot of business and church support coming forward. That, in fact, was a part of City Council's spiel 2 weeks ago when they sort of said, oh, let's get Ken Cole, the Homeless Services Center, to go out there and do a special rah-rah talk to churches and businesses and get them to allow more people to park on in their parking lots. This, of course, was because the city, again, was ducking responsibility. It had, months ago, discarded the plan by Area Chamber of Commerce CEO Michael Schmidt that sought safe sleeping places, such as the county building, such as the parking structure number 10, such as the police station. All these places, for one reason or another, were found, quote, unsuitable, the same way that Catherine Byers and Celia Scott found every single campground site they considered in 1995 and 96 unsuitable. So the question of where can vehicles park and sleep came back to the city council two nights ago. It actually didn't come back. It comes back every night to those who have that need, and when people get together and press the need, it comes back with a vengeance to the city council and to the community, and I'm hoping that people will get together and make it clear, particularly people in houses, that this kind of treatment of poor people, and that's what we're seeing is massive mistreatment here, of a really insufferable kind. That is mistreatment, which is fundamentally a criminalization of a person after 11 o'clock at night because of their economic status. And this is being perpetuated by the timid liberals who turn themselves the new progressives, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar. In fact, it is it's causing some amusement among the conservative side of the council, Rotkin, Matthews, and Hernandez, who are expecting to make political hay on the whole situation at the next election. Anyway, what happened at the council, for those of you who haven't read the papers, is that since they discarded safe sleeping zones without any real public discussion or debate, interestingly enough, they put them into place without much discussion or debate. They paid no attention to any suggestions people in the audience had on May 23rd, and of course, at 1 a.m. in the morning, when they listened to two or three of us before arresting me and having me removed from the chambers back on June 27th when they discarded the safe zones, they didn't listen to us either. This council is a council that's generally made up its mind before it starts and doesn't really care what the public has to say, except for certain very small sectors of the public, and that really has to do with the impact that particular people in the public arena have on key council members like Catherine Byers, the 10-year council person who's a lame duck now. She was appointed in 1989 after council member Mo Reisch resigned in disgrace for a nasty fuck you Valentine to I guess it was a Scotts Valley minister, and then lying about it. She's been in power, and initially she got a reputation as a very liberal person, cared about the homeless, was one of two votes for a safe zone or a safe campground in what is now the River Street Shelter Community House area. But gradually over the years, she became more and more conservative. She was expected to lead a four-vote majority with the, quote, new progressives, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, who were elected in November of 1998 to throw out the bad old Rotkin-Kennedy non-progressive, developed-to-death-the-beach south of Laurel plan majority. But what happened, of course, is that Byers, as really wouldn't be terribly hard to predict, looking at her record for the last 5 years, became more, well, she became, I think, entranced with her position of power on the city council, because she did have the balance of power between the three new members and the three old members, so she could pretty much call the shots on a lot of issues. And that, I guess, is a position that, you know, can corrupt anyone, can influence anyone, can make anyone, turn anyone, well, away from their earlier principles, assuming that they had those principles, and that one had. And I, it's really hard to say. You know, I've heard secondhand information from those who've worked with Catherine Byers as a social service provider that of all the council members, she is the slipperiest. And I don't have any clear feeling on that, except that I know she has reversed herself significantly. Seemed to reverse herself significantly. A number of times on the sleeping ban, in a way that seemed to be premeditated. So, for instance, in 1998, after the new council was elected on a platform which included sleeping ban reform, instead of, as we had hoped, in the winter of 1998-99, declaring a moratorium on the sleeping ban and voting to let people sleep in vehicles and let people sleep in certain zones and put in necessary sanitary facilities during the winter, she established a task force to examine the camping ordinance instead, and she sort of set up this, she helped to defeat a proposal by Keith Sugar, which came up at the last council meeting of the year of 1998, which would have decriminalized sleeping unless there was some other law. And Sugar was sort of inexperienced in this matter, and he was sort of shot down by Rotkin, Barisone, Byers, and Belcher. In a kind of a nice firing squad. And this so affected him that he had nothing to say really in any strong public way, not that he's had much to say before. He'd said, in fact, before that he would not lead on the sleeping ban, he would merely support it. But that once it had been brought up, he wanted, you know, to get some sensible things done. He's always had an unfortunate social service bent, somehow believes everybody should be drawn into a social service program, revamped and put back on the assembly line, built to mainstream America. Thank you very much. Or perhaps to productivity, as he sees it. Anyway, Byers, instead of this idea of joining with the three new progressives in this landslide vote they'd gotten in 1998 for real changes in the sleeping ban, at least over the winter, where it was nasty weather, people needed protection, there was shelter for less than 20% of the people, she said instead, oh, we'll study the issue. So they met, and they met, and they met. And I remember, because I went to almost every one of those meetings and recorded them, took notes on them, wrote about them. Of course, it was foolish for me to waste the kind of time that I did on that, but there I did. That's, I guess, the passions of somebody who's interested in the issue. And what finally happened was, the minute that they began to finally turn to the actual wording of how to take up the sleeping ban, because there had been an initiative that had been circulated saying, let's make it legal for people to sleep in certain zones, not in the beach area, not in the downtown, not in the residential areas, but elsewhere. And this was broader than the industrial zone stuff that we saw recently. This was David Silva and others. I was one of the movers of this initiative. I actually got, David and I got the most, I think we vied for who got the most signatures for this petition. And this was a legal petition to put something on the ballot, and it failed of El Nino and other problems, illness. Some of the petitions were reportedly stolen. It was a difficult situation, and we didn't have enough organization to do it, but we did get thousands and thousands of signatures. I think we got 3,000 or around 3,000 signatures at least. In fact, I think David said there were around 3,000 valid signatures. I'm not quite sure the exact number for that first petition. But Byers noticed this was happening, so there was this sort of effort she was doing to study, a task force to examine the camping ordinance. And all we were talking about that time was the sleeping ban, which is only a small part of the camping ordinance. It doesn't talk about tents, doesn't talk about cooking equipment. It talks only about sleeping. And we had hoped to simply deal with that part, which is the part which is a human rights violation, and then hoped later to set up the campgrounds that would allow people to camp legally in certain places. But before, we first wanted to make sure that people were not getting arrested for simply engaging in survival behavior. Well, Byers, in February of 1999, a year and a half ago, suddenly announced one day in these meetings that she just simply couldn't make any real changes in the sleeping ban because there's just no place for homeless people. These are actually her literal words. There's no place for them. So Crone and Sugar, instead of standing up and saying, hold it, we've been working for 2 months on this, what are you talking about, just meekly trailed along behind her and just sort of said very little. And indeed, when the issue came up, they voted for a broader proposal, but they didn't advocate for it publicly. They didn't talk about the needs in any strong way that would have perhaps offended, dare I say, Queen Catherine, because that was the kind of role she was taking. And so the whole thing died. Instead, Crone set up this task force, homeless issues task force, $10,000 task force, and a bathroom task force. And that's what came out of this first thing winter before last. And the homeless issues task force, I expected to be a farce, and in fact, it did in fact prove to be largely a farce, but it also came up with some sensible recommendations immediately, for example, eliminating the entire camping ordinance. Catherine Byers, as mayor, and she was mayor throughout 1999, refused to put this on the agenda as even an informational item. She didn't even receive it in her office as information. And she did this with other recommendations like rent control, which was also passed by the Homeless Issues Task Force. There was a whole series of recommendations in the fall of 1999 that were passed that were completely ignored. And indeed, this was partially steered by her paid appointee, Don Lane, former mayor, who was appointed by her and Dick Wilson behind closed doors. Lane has not been homeless, is not homeless, and essentially has been supporting the anti-homeless factions. They're all pretty much anti-homeless factions, it looks like, these days, but the factions in the 1998 election that wanted an even more conservative council. Linda Steinau, Rod Quartararo, Jane Walton, those were the candidates that were running against the three golden-haired boys, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, who finally won. Anyway, I guess this history lesson can go on forever, and I'm going to kind of skip to the present. What Byers did most recently, at the last council meeting, she did absolutely nothing. She said nothing. She said not a word about this whole issue, and that was very telling. What happened on July, I guess it was July 11th. It was July 11th, and that makes today the 13th. I guess I'm going to get my dates right here. On July 11th, the Fitzmaurice brought up a resolution which apparently was a sort of a deal that he and the others had made with David Silva. This is my reading of it. David Silva is an activist who was the only activist allowed into the top secret negotiations with the mayor that they finally began to have as our protests mounted. And Silva was one of the people who was working very hard to end the sleeping ban, both through the initiative process and through leading fasts. However, David and I have had numerous disputes about there not being solidarity on this issue, and we will no doubt continue to have differences of opinion on that. What happened was David was sold out by the group at City Council, repeatedly sold out, and he acknowledges this now, and perhaps he'll be calling in to talk about it. In fact, he is invited to call in, and by the way, so are you, because you're tuned to free radio, and that's free means you don't have to pay to call in unless you're at a payphone, in which case, sorry about that. But the phone number here is 427-3772, 427-3772 if you want to join this discussion. Anyway, Fitzmaurice introduced the resolution which wouldn't change a thing in the sleeping ban until the election. And instead of putting the issue on the ballot for a real change, let's say the safe zones or sleeping in vehicles somewhere, what Fitzmaurice has proposed to put on the ballot, and he hasn't given us the exact wording because he apparently didn't feel it necessary to bring the exact wording to City Council, even though the issue has been all over the papers, extremely important for homeless people, pursued through two, count them, two task forces in the last 2 years, Still, old Tim just didn't bring any language to City Council about this whole issue in any clear way. Nothing was on the agenda in a very clear way. But what he said verbally was, it would still be illegal to park and sleep in a vehicle anywhere in Santa Cruz as it now is, with the exception of churches and businesses, and oh, you can also park three nights in a driveway per month. Then we call that three nights and get out of town as a sort of the Fitzmaurice deal. He kind of picked that one up because he heard about 72-hour notices they give to vehicles, abandoned vehicles, on the street. And he somehow thought that this should have some reference to people sleeping in their vehicles, which, of course, it doesn't. What the reference is to is fear from the neighbors, paranoia about offending the sensibilities of West Side people, people who are conservative residents in the neighborhood, a residents association around Maple Street, fear of offending a class of people that has so much more than homeless people has, with the idea that they would, you're going to cater and pander to people who are afraid because there are people outside who need to sleep and they're sleeping in a vehicle on their street. I find the whole thing really repugnant. You know, really, really repugnant. And it sort of sickens me, although I guess I shouldn't really be sickened because I should realize that's what happens in politics, to know that these are the people that run our city. These are the people that Fitzmaurice, Crone, Sugar, Byers, and of course Matthews, Rotkin, and Hernandez all listen to. And the frightening thing is that these are probably the people that Emily Riley is going to listen to. These are the people that the new scan back candidates, they aren't scanned back yet, but I will bet you that very soon they will be, that are running for city council, are also going to be, again, sort of kindler, gentler carbon copies of the Republicans. And these are Republicans, you know. They're wearing progressive clothing, but they're Republicans in the sense of how they deal with poor people, in the sense of who they listen to before they make their decisions. And it's kind of sad. You got a community in Santa Cruz that's vastly Democratic, and yet the people that are running the show have a mentality which is Stone Age on issues of human rights. And the irony also is that the activist community, which is busy planning to go down to the Democratic Convention, and who knows, I may do the same. Homeless people down there are going to be protesting in Los Angeles as well they should. But they can't seem to muster strong support here for the human rights of the people who live here. They can muster some support for the trees. They can oppose, you know, genetic engineering, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing to do, it is, but they can't get out there and do it for homeless people in any sustained, significant way. And so that's the reason these politicians can continue doing what they do, because they aren't effectively challenged. And I guess my question to listeners, for those of you who are listening, and please call me on this if I'm wrong, is what are you going to do? The city council has lied to the population. They have proposed, again, I guess, let me get down to it. Fitzmaurice proposed an advisory proposal that would make it legal in November to sleep on sidewalks and on public property. Let me put it this way. It would change the definition of camp to exclude the word sleep, but you would still not be able to sleep in your vehicle anywhere on public property, and you would still not be allowed to camp anywhere, period. So, in theory, if you want to look at this proposal, it says if you're outside, they can't ticket you for lying down and going to sleep somewhere on public property. And I got to say that, isn't that good? You know, as someone would say to me, I mean, isn't that what you're looking for, so it's to say sleeping is not camping? Yes, certainly. But there's some things to be talked about here. For example, it's not, first of all, a legal change. It's only an advisory change. That is to say, it's something that's being put on the ballot to advise the next city council. So if you put a lot of energy into passing this damn thing, you're still going to have to persuade the next city council to pass it, because it won't automatically change into law. What people circulating the Silva initiative, I should say the two initiatives, to end the sleeping ban wanted was to have something specific and real put on the ballot that would actually change the law, so that once that voters spoke, that would be it. Simply having an advisory proposal leaves everything once more in the hands of the city council, and they can do whatever they want. And who they choose to listen to, regardless of what the voters have done, is who they choose to listen to. And apparently last time they chose to listen to people from Harvey West Park, Plantronics, Texas Instruments, people from Mission Street Extension who were ranting and raving, really ranting and raving. They had some real concerns. I don't want to say that there weren't some real problems, because police did herd people into these areas early. They did not place porta-potties and dumpsters, as we have demanded repeatedly, but they have declined to do. Dick Wilson can get apparently $40,000 salary advance, as he did at the last city council meeting, for the next 2 years, but he can't see clear to putting some porta-potties out in the industrial zones, as he should now, even though there is no sleeping ban zone proposal there, but there still are people there. And you want to have facilities for people day or night so that the area is kept clean, so that homeless people are not blamed for doing what they have to do, because we all have to do what we do, and that's a little doo-doo. So what's coming up in the fall, if Fitzmaurice's proposal gets a vote of confidence at the next city council, and it may well, it looks like the three other members of the council like it. That's Hernandez, Rutkin, and Matthews, and that's kind of a warning sign there. But they like it because they think it can be used to defeat. I think they haven't said this, but I suspect they want to defeat the progressives, or the ones who call themselves progressives. And they also want to be able to essentially kick in the teeth the sleeping ban protesters and say, see, the community doesn't support you. And of course, the problem is going to be in any election race, as we've talked about before, it's going to be a question of money and public exposure to some extent, because some nasty quick spot ads are showing dirty homeless people, hypodermic needles, that may have no relation to reality, come sleep in the streets of Santa Cruz. In order to be effectively countered with real information from Fort Lauderdale, from Broward County, from Miami, from Eugene, from Santa Barbara, that there is no magnet effect, and that in fact when homeless people are more visible because sleeping bans have been removed or suspended, that more social services appear. So there's no deleterious effect on social services. So you have to get this message out to the public, because Keith Sugar isn't putting out the message to the public. Tim Fitzmaurice isn't saying a word. SCAN has not been heard from. And I'm putting out flyers, but hey, those go to a small select community, and they don't go too far. The news media prints what it wants. What's needed, of course, is a financial backing for a significant campaign around it, and that, of course, is not on the horizon as far as I can see. Does that mean the sleeping ban should not be put on the ballot? I don't think so. I mean, we talked about this at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meetings, the group I work with, and ROAR, Restore Our American Rights, a campers group. And we decided, in spite of all the risks, it was important to put the sleeping ban on the ballot. But again, this is not what Fitzmaurice is doing. He is putting an advisory matter on the ballot that only concerns sleeping on sidewalks and public areas. It doesn't concern the more reasonable and safer sleeping in vehicles, for instance. So it sounds like Fitzmaurice and Sugar and Crone saw, oh, Catherine Byers turned away from this proposal because of Texas Instruments writing lots of letters and Plantronics sending lots of emails in saying, get those dirty homeless people out of our industrial zones, although they didn't present any documentation. The police didn't present any documentation. The Parks and Rec and the Public Works Department didn't present any list of how many problems they had. There was no recitation of evidence. There was just Catherine Byers. When she snaps her fingers, apparently the council jumps through the hoop. So that's what happened with that. Who's going to say that if they don't raise a similar cry about people sleeping on the street, which is going to be much more visible and will presumably be much more irritating to people, and it's going to be all over the city. It's not just going to be in residential and in industrial zones. It'll be in residential neighborhoods. It'll be everywhere. The idea that Fitzmaurice and Crone and Sugar are going to take an active role in pushing this is ridiculous. They're not going to do it. They have not shown any stomach for basic human rights for homeless people in Santa Cruz, whether it be in terms of fighting police abuse or in terms of defending the rights of homeless people. And it's too bad to say this, but all they can think about is, do I have the votes, do I have the political support, and how can we postpone oral communication until Robert Norris leaves the room? We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio. they don't want to aberrate the process, Robert.
Oh, this sounds like that aberration Uncle Bob Lamont.
I can't stay on the air long. I just wanted to say that.
Okay.
I'll listen in.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Now, that's Bob LaMonica, who pushed for rent control for a long time, though he didn't take my advice to push for a specific proposal, instead pushed for an advisory proposal, which, like with the sleeping ban, I think, you know, it's a halfway measure, and I like to see, I think a stronger measure is important. I think it's important that Fitzmaurice, for example, come back with a stronger measure. So, what I'm saying to all of you folks out there who want to have real change, if you're near a phone and you feel like it, give a dial to 420-5017 and tell the city council that you want them to act immediately to end the sleeping ban. What that means to you is that they don't wait for the next election, because they have the power to end it by 4 votes. What they need to do is they need to make it legal for people to sleep, not to spit, not to shit, not to throw up on the sidewalk, not to vandalize, but to sleep. And that needs to be the reality of the situation. And they need to do it also in vehicles. And if they want to restrict it to zones, they can restrict it to zones. But perhaps the best way would be a citywide policy of tolerance, like Eugene has in some public areas. Eugene has 16 of them, where vehicles, 3 vehicles in each of the areas, can park and people can sleep, and there are porta-potties and dumpsters. Call them up, tell them end the sleeping ban, and tell them to put porta-potties and dumpsters in areas right now where people are getting tickets, where people are in fact outside, because it's only showing respect for the neighborhood to do that. If you don't do that, you have a filthy neighborhood, and I don't think that makes any sense. 420-5017, give a call to City Council and tell them to do that. Of course, what you really should do is you should call 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the group that is trying to organize protests around this and is looking. They're kicking around some ideas. One of them is to have a, whether it's 300, 500, or 1,000, all these figures have been kicked around. What Eugene did was they had people sign a petition that said, we commit ourselves when, I guess the number they had was 3,000. When 3,000 people have signed this petition, we will go and ourselves begin a campaign of civil disobedience to end the sleeping ban, to set up legal places for homeless people to sleep. And the city council, when it saw this petition, which was rolled out apparently, and took, it was 40 feet long when they unrolled the whole thing, something like that, they believed and they changed their law. And they set up industrial zone parking and sleeping areas. And then when certain Plantronic Texas Instrument types up there began bleating and crying and yowling, they changed the law back, but they changed it again to make sure that the police did not control the ticketing process anymore, that it was a private service provider from St. Vincent's. And I keep looking at that as something to look at, if not a model to use or an interim approach to use in this situation. But, of course, we don't hear a word from Catherine Byers and nor from our mayor, Keith Sugar, on this issue. And you might suggest that if you call 420-5017, it's time to consider the Eugene model immediately, because whatever kind of face-saving gesture the city council does to put something on the ballot in November as an advisory measure, we need action now. We need action immediately. We need action before more people are hurt, before more people suffer. We need action to regain the dignity of people. And this is only going to happen if people turn out in large numbers, peacefully, to make this demand. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's city council, although there's nothing wrong with coming to city council to do it. So, that's part of my spiel at the moment. I'm not entirely well prepared here, so I'm going to do a little queuing up as I kind of talk to you here on the radio. Last week, we found the right space here. Jerry Henry, you may remember, is a man who has recently been found guilty by a court. He's been found guilty of trespassing to interfere with a business. That doesn't mean he walked into a business to trespass. No, they considered that his being in front of a store, Gottschalk's and the Coffee Roasting Company and Rancho Liquors out on the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, and complaining about discriminatory practices by these stores and by the sheriff's deputies that they were using as a private police force and by First Alarm security guards, this constituted a form of interfering with a business. And he had a jury trial, and I guess a number of the counts were dismissed. A number of the others was found not guilty. One was a hung jury, an important count which talked about a pattern of public nuisance, quote-unquote. And he was found guilty on several counts of, I think it was, disturbing the peace, because he was considered to have spoken loudly on some of the issues. So, he's coming up for sentencing, and that is going to be in Judge Kelsey's court. I believe it is on July 21st, and if my producer is listening and I'm getting this wrong, please help me out with this, and I will be announcing it more specifically and closer to the actual date. So, if anybody wants to come to that sentencing hearing, I'm sure their presence will be welcomed. I have an interview with him that happened right after the trial. Actually, it happened, I did it last Sunday. I'm going to play that now. And here's a man who fed a lot of people with Feed the People, the group that Sean Alimi started. Here's a man who peacefully but persistently asserted his right to be in a public space, like another man, Robert Steffen. You may remember him, the umbrella man, man downtown in the black plastic garbage bag who's kind of moved near the cafe at Bookshop Santa Cruz. And he's featured in the Metro this week. Actually kind of a nice neutral story. Here's Jerry Henry. Let's listen to him. Okay, we're on the line with Jerry Henry, who's been working with Feed the People over the past few years, and he's also been fighting a court fight to be able to be in a public space, the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, without being harassed by security guards, cops, and business folks. How you doing, Jerry?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
You just finished, I guess, a week-long trial, mm-hmm. and the outcome of that was you were found guilty on some charges, not guilty on others, and one was hung, and maybe one was dismissed. Do you want to give us the update on that? Do you know that?
No, I was found not guilty on two counts of, and found guilty on four counts, two trespasses, two disturbing the pieces, and hung jury on the 372, which would have been the public nuisance charge.
So you're a trespasser and a disturber, but you're not a nuisance, huh?
That's what it looks right now, though. Kovacevich talking, he may retry the public nuisance.
Kovacevich, of course, is the district attorney, once a judge who seemed to have taken a special interest
in
coming after you, and he was involved in the famous vampire killer prosecution, too. They must have spent tens of thousands of dollars on this case, more than that, actually, if you consider their past attempts to get you out of the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, and I guess they have, after $200,000 bail, incarcerations that you've suffered, all for nonviolent so-called crimes against, which don't involve any destruction of property or injuries to people. What do you make of all this, Jerry?
Well, it's pretty pathetic. There's a lot more positive things they could do. We were just rebuilding the showers down at St. Francis. I know there's a lot of good places they could be spending the money rather than wasting it on pursuing things like this.
Now, barred from the Rancho Del Mar, you've been spending more time in downtown Santa Cruz. Any observations or reports from Pacific Avenue?
I've been at St. Francis the last week. They've got the new camera out in front of New Leaf, and that's kind of pathetic.
It's a camera surveilling the street from the kind of about 12, 15 feet up on the New Leaf Market, looking down on, I guess, the area where the Sushi Now customers are and where the planters are.
Actually, looking towards Alibaba.
The Alibaba's Cafe, where, of course, there's a lot of controversy with Alibaba, who's repeatedly called police on homeless people and young people in that area for such things as playing music, chalking on the sidewalk, and things of that sort. Are you, how are you feeling? I guess you're facing a sentencing hearing coming up on, what date is that?
Sentencing's 21st.
July 21st at 9 o'clock?
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock, in Department 2.
Uh-huh.
That'll be Commissioner Kelsey, previously a judge, then retired, now back in business, who's at least going to sock you with a $100 restitution fine.
We know that now. Well, we've got some motions that are going to be made. It may get interesting.
And you are appealing the convictions as well?
Yes. Yes, I believe it'll all be appealed if the motions don't carry. I know some motions are going to be made.
Was there any media coverage of this trial that you know of?
No, not at all. There was. I don't think we have a press anymore. I think the press has just pretty much been done in.
Well, I know that there was a steady interest from some of us. We at Huff turned out a press release on your case and have recorded the entire case on the archives for those who want to hear it. It's not. It won't be publicly broadcast except possibly for the closing arguments, which the judge granted permission to have publicly aired. But it's interesting that the media declined to cover this, although the Mid-County Post did do a story on you several weeks before the trial. And I guess Jay Olson said at some point, he's the reporter who did the story, he might do a follow-up. What do you think is going to be the result of the consequences of this trial? Of course, you can't tell until you've been sentenced, but you know that Robert Steffen, the umbrella man who lives under a plastic bag on Pacific Avenue during the day, running for president on a platform and looking for housing and legal assistance, you can see him sitting near, I guess it's So Say We, used to be Georgiana's Cafe down at the Bookshop Santa Cruz. I think that's what it's called. It's right near that Games and Things. Is it Games and Things? No, it's Gamescape. Nope, it's not Gamescape. It's the game store next to the bookshop. He, of course, was driven away from Bunny Shoes, where he'd been sitting for 7 months on the bench. Actually, he was just sitting on a public bench. Bunny Shoes happens to have a store there. They decided he was a bad influence, and the hat company woman filed a complaint against Steffen for disturbing the peace when he complained that someone had grabbed his sign and run off with it. Of course, Officer Brandt declined to take a report, a complaint from Steffen for theft, instead cited him for shouting, "Stop thief," or something along those lines. I wasn't present, didn't make
it. It seems like the police are just there for the merchants today, and it's a lot of what I experienced, that the true criminals aren't even sought after. I know Robert Steffen, he was testifying before my trial started one day, and I stepped into the courtroom to listen to him, and that the man wears that plastic around him to keep people from spitting on him, and that I think he's been the victim of a lot of criminal activity, and that they just seem to want to criminalize him, and they're using this criminal prosecutions to further their social cleansing.
Social cleansing, yeah. Well, I haven't heard a word from Robert. I'm a little miffed with him because he doesn't talk much to me or to other activists. I somehow think that having a closer cooperation between activists would result in less harassment of both the activists and also other people, which I think is really the point, because when activists do this, they aren't just doing it for themselves. They think they're doing it, you know, as a statement for the community and as a sort of a warning against a bad process that's happening in the community.
It's scary. I listen to people tell some horrendous lies about me, and I think a lot of people feel a lot safer than they probably are if they knew how the criminal prosecution system was being used to actually further the social cleansing.
Did you learn anything in the court system while you were? You must have spent scores of hours in court, either waiting for court or sitting in court or going to and from court. Did you run into any other people that were of interest in the court system that opened your eyes in any way?
Well, Robert Steffen was one of the big ones. Because it's so correlated to mine that
he was sitting on a bench outside Bunny Shoes, and you were sitting in the area outside the coffee roasting company in Aptos at the Rancho Del Mar in Gottschalk's.
Oh, but I think both of them relate to the roasting company, you know, just two different stores, one downtown and one at Rancho Del Mar.
I'm not aware that the roasting company had much to do with the Steffen case. I know that the hat company and the Bunny Shoes did. Did you know that the roasting company had much to do with that?
No, I don't know, actually, but...
I know that it had to do with your case, definitely. I heard Colleen, testify, the owner, that, you know, she... I don't recall exactly what she testified, but she was testifying for the prosecution.
Yeah, I find it weird that they're using criminal prosecutions to do their social cleansing and actually prosecuting the victims of the crimes.
It's amazing, isn't it? No matter how many times you see it, it's just it strikes you as such a reversal of both reality and justice to do that.
I know that it's real scary that if they keep moving with this 372 like they tried to move against me with it and Kovacevic.
372 is the public nuisance, right?
Yeah, the 372 is a public nuisance.
Uh-huh.
That if Kovacevic does proceed with that, he refuses to dismiss the count, that just about anybody could be deemed a public nuisance.
Well, I definitely think that Kovacevic is our number one public nuisance in this situation, so...
84 days in court.
He gets my vote. 84 days in court. Amazing. Jerry, is there any way people can be supportive of you in this situation or support the importance of ending the social cleansing harassment of poor people in Santa Cruz who are different or too active or protest business injustices?
I think people need to wake up and watch what's going on and become more and more aware and more active. I was thrilled by the people that came and testified for me, but I was really surprised by the people that weren't willing to get involved, and that we need our people more involved in volunteering for jury duty.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that there is a protest coming up at City Council at 7 o'clock on the Tuesday around the Golden Potty Award is going to be presented to Shadow Mayor Catherine Byers, who has single-handedly destroyed the safe sleeping zone proposal yet again. That'll be at 7 o'clock in the evening. Do you think you'll be at that protest?
Is it tonight?
No, it'll be on Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah.
And there'll be a meal at 6:30, and then there'll be a protest at 7. I just wanted to invite you to come on down.
I'm there.
And, you know, you can also speak at Oral Communications on any subject, and that includes your trial, and you, of course, can speak. There'll be two items on the agenda. One is the sleeping ban going on the November ballot, which apparently looks like they're going to try to stop that from happening. And the other is the Homeless Issues Task Force is coming up with a whole series of recommendations, which include such things as eliminating the entire camping ban, because the camping ban itself, including the sleeping ban sections, makes survival a crime in bad weather for poor people if they want to set up a tent, if they want to protect their family.
Robert, I've about decided that it's not just poor people,
uh-huh.
that it's people that are different. You know, people that have chosen different lifestyles and stuff.
That's certainly true.
And it's not necessarily poor. I think a lot of people are thinking this is just a poor issue,
mm-hmm.
and that it goes way past those bounds. That it anybody that would have an alternative lifestyle and hope to God we keep some diversity in this country.
I hear you. We're talking with Jerry Henry, who is. Going to be sentenced on July 21st, if I'm not mistaken?
21st.
At 10 o'clock in Department 2, and invite you to come on down and stand with him for the right not to be dragged off the street and held on a $100,000 bail because the businesses tell the security guards to do it.
And the right to be left alone.
The right to be left alone. Sort of a basic American right. I want to thank you, Jerry, for being with us. Anything you want to conclude with?
Well, that's about it, Robert. Thanks for giving me a call.
Hey, thank you.
That was Jerry Henry. I'm Robert Norse. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I want to announce a little bit belatedly, for those who have cable television, on Channel 27, you can hear and see me interviewing on Club Cruise the newly released Steve Argue, who reportedly, at least that's what the Metro told us yesterday, is one of the folks considering running for city council. We had a list of possible contenders. Not a complete list, for sure, because I had Jake on my show who has announced he's running for city council. For some reason, they just didn't get old Jake. And then I met another associate. I think he's on the rodent slate. I think a rumor has it rodent is running a slate this time, although I'm not sure of that, actually. So, check it, Channel 27 for Steve Argue talking about life in jail in Santa Cruz jail. We're not talking about Mumia Abu Jamal in Philadelphia or problems in Burma, and I'm not saying that these aren't important issues, they are, but we're talking about something that's much closer to home, how people are treated in our own jail, and you can actually get an on-the-spot report there by listening to Steve and watching him on Channel 27. Hopefully some of the community will be doing that right now as I speak. It's on Club Cruise, which is on every Tuesday and Thursday. On Sunday, on Free Radio, we're going to be looking further into, well, I have a guest, Lucy Kimmitzer, who's a local writer as well as a member of the Homeless Issues Task Force. Lucy and I have had extreme disagreements in the past on the Homeless Issues Task Force, and I don't pretend that I won't continue to have extreme disagreements with her. But she will be on the air talking about the final days of the Homeless Issues Task Force. Maybe we can get Linda LeMaster, too. Who knows? She was the chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force. Why even bother with this? Well, the reason for that is that this is a $10,000 task force that actually discussed at length specific homeless issues and then was systematically buried afterward. And I think they can give us some insight into how our local government works. And they also have some, I think, insight into how homeless people, what their needs are at the current time. Although, I'm sure anybody who listens to this show can get an eyeful of that. So, Lucy Kimmitzer will be on our Sunday show from 11 to 1:30 at sometime in that period. Lucy wrote some excellent articles in the late last year for the Sentinel and for the Street Spirit newspaper on beatings and police mistreatment of the homeless. And indeed, she did speak up at the Tuesday council session, pointing out that the city council misunderstood the police provision of the Homeless Issues Task Force report. I actually began to attend Homeless Issues Task Force meetings less and less, particularly as they cut back on public comment, and simply went into sort of report production mode without having any public process, as they did. They got out a report that, ironically enough, omitted the main crucial resolutions they had earlier passed. It wasn't really ironic, because Don Lane was the staff person. He was close to Catherine Byers, and there's no way you wanted to see the camping ordinance, repeal of the camping ordinance, which was the first, middle, and last action of the Homeless Issues Task Force in terms of its strongest action as any kind of centerpiece, because he felt that would antagonize the powers that be, even though it simply stated the obvious, that the most basic need for homeless people is shelter and freedom from violence at the moment. You can talk about all the bells, whistles, and stuff you want about a $500,000 kitchen in the homeless services center or whatever transitional housing programs for a small number. But the reality is, majority of people are illegal every night and outside. I mean, that's the reason we keep bringing it up here, is because it's where you start, and you have to deal with that before you proceed. So, the Homeless Issues Task Force, that resolution, which they immediately passed, at one point unanimously, calling for safe zones and demanding it happen by before the December recess of City Council, was completely omitted. And, of course, didn't get a word at the July 11th council meeting, which heard 2 hours of Keith Sugar running through his deal with the city council. Sugar was supposed to come back with a set of priorities around the Homeless Issues Task Force, and what he did do instead was he came back with rules that shifted on public comment 5 separate times. And what they did was they excluded essentially from public comment the homeless people who came. And in so doing, they violated, in my mind, the Brown Act, and Sugar himself has shown really a complete disregard for the Brown Act. You'll see him frequently proceeding to go ahead without asking if there's any public comment and omit it, and the only time he'll stop is if you stand up and shout public comment, and then he'll, if he feels like it, go back. There have been other occasions, for example, when the city council was considering commission appointments, I don't know when it was, April, maybe March, that when I said public comment, he said, "Sit down, Robert," indicating he wouldn't entertain that, and that was a complete violation of the Brown Act, and City Attorney Barisone actually backed me up on that one. Now, there's a 30-day, what can one do about it? Well, there's a 30-day window here, you can actually file a complaint about Brown Act violations. What's the Brown Act? That's the Public Process Act that allows the public to be heard, that insists that councils can't do things behind closed doors. They have to put things on the agenda they're going to do. They have to allow the public input into what they're going to do. They have to post an agenda so public knows what they're going to do. They can't suddenly change horses in midstream. So, for example, when they voted on June 27th to end the safe sleeping zones, to withdraw that ordinance from publication, as they did at 1:30 in the morning, that was a violation of the Brown Act, in my opinion, because that wasn't on the agenda. They didn't have on the agenda considering or withdrawing from publication on the June 27th agenda the safe sleeping zones. Rather, they had on the agenda placing the safe sleeping zones on the agenda on July 11th. So a lot of people didn't come because they assumed they were just going to discuss whether to put it on the agenda on July 11th, not whether to withdraw the whole thing from publication entirely. And you might say, well, what other thing is there than withdrawing the law from publication? Well, they've been delaying the law again and again and again. They had done that on June, I guess it was June 13th. And there was no reason to believe they wouldn't delay it again, because they had said they were going to delay it as long as they needed, because it takes so many years to put in those porta-potties, and it requires careful thought, and then you have to actually go rent one, and then you have to wheel it out there. I mean, this takes a lot of time, a lot of energy, and the council apparently just couldn't get it together or couldn't persuade their staff to do it. Certainly Dick Wilson might have soiled his silk suit, and, you know, he has to be concerned about appearances to some extent, because he does represent the face of the city, or perhaps the two faces of the city. In any case, by not discussing what they had, by taking action other than they let people know they were going to take action on, by removing a whole ordinance from publication entirely, the safe sleeping zones, without telling people that they were going to do that, or had that up on the agenda for consideration, they broke the law. And in my mind, they should suffer some kind of penalties for that, and they certainly should have to redo the item so the public will have an opportunity to speak on it. And I'm looking into filing a complaint. I'm not quite sure how elaborate the process is. I'm going to actually be talking to a lawyer about it tomorrow, and I hope he'll have a report for you on Sunday as to Brown Act violations. Sugar, again, as I said, repeatedly violated the Brown Act at the most recent session on July 11th. He told David Silva not to mention the police chief, not to criticize the police chief. He interrupted his speech. Sugar does this repeatedly with people. He tells you, you can't speak badly of public officials. You can't make, quote, personal attacks. That's not true. The only real specific guideline in the city council agenda book that I think has First Amendment force, and even that is questionable, is you can't address council members except as a group. You have to address the entire council. You can't say, you, Rotkin, and you. Although I think, actually, that's First Amendment permitted as well. But I've tried to myself abide by that standard. But Rotkin in the past has said, if you mention a council member's name, that's inappropriate, and you can be silenced or even removed from the chambers, and perhaps arrested if you continue to do so, and if you refuse to leave the chambers and insist on speaking. Well, that's clearly an attempt to regulate the content of speech given by a person at city council. And that's what Sugar did, for example, two nights ago when he told David Silva, you can't mention the police chief. You can't criticize the police chief. I don't want to hear any criticism. He gave a special nasty little speech, did Sugar, to all the sleeping band protesters, telling me he wanted them to be very civil. And it's okay for council members to say what they want. We all should have a right to say what we want. But when a man who has the gavel, has the ear of the police, has four armed police officers, three of them officers, one sergeant, and an undercover officer, Howes, leaning against the side of the chambers. When in a previous session, this same Mayor Sugar has had 22 cops in the back and previously fingered an activist, James Ney, and said, when I give the signal, arrest him, even before he'd done anything wrong whatsoever, when this same Ney was arrested, dragged out of the room, his property destroyed, held for an hour, charges dismissed, because Ney was pointing out, very ironically, an oral communications cutting off that Mayor Sugar had done. He was cutting off public comment prematurely. When a member of the public protested Sugar's behavior, Sugar had that member arrested. Similarly, when I, 2 weeks ago, saw Sugar cutting off the microphone of a speaker, Becky Johnson, on the issue of the safe sleeping zones, and said, don't cut her off, and he demanded I leave the room, and I said, no. I'm a part of this public meeting. he had four police officers arrest me and remove me from the room. This is a form of police state behavior. It's police state behavior because there's no legal basis for it, and because it creates a climate of fear. I guess it's not really, police state is the wrong word to use. He's using the police for political purposes. He's using the police to silence dissent. And I guess what I'm talking about here, at police state, you have the police officer running it. And Sugar is not a police officer. He's just an arrogant environmental attorney who got elected and now apparently feels it's okay to disregard the public and to disregard the laws that rule they're supposed to regulate city council. So one proposal that's come up, and I'd like folks to give me their thoughts on it, is to have to give notice to Mayor Sugar that after a certain number more of Brown Act violations, possibly documented on a large thermometer, which could be placed in a prominent location downtown and brought to city council on the right nights, if he passes that... request that he be recalled. And you need a significant number of votes. I think, I don't know, 3,000, 4,000 registered voters to do it. Might be hard to do, but it certainly would be a way of sampling public opinion and of raising the issue. So that's something I've been thinking about, and if you have any thoughts on that, give me a call here at Free Radio at 96.3. Call-in number is 427-3772. It sounds maybe like a little petty and counterproductive, because isn't Sugar one of the most liberal people on the council? Sure he is, in a number of positions, and I've always had that conflict myself. But at the last council meeting, for instance, not only did he attempt to shut up David Silva, not only did he cut off Steve Argue's mic and tell him to sit down when Argue pointed out a Brown Act violation, he instructed the police. I have to assume it was him because he's the mayor, and I was the Sergeant Hennig would not tell me who it was, but it had to be him. That if I brought the light 5-pound gold painted porta potty, and you were all wondering about that porta potty award, weren't you? Admitted out there, the golden porta potty award that we've been talking about. If I brought the porta potty, it's actually just a sort of a handicapped stool that. Used by folks at a bed stool into the council chambers, and it was completely clean and painted gold and wrapped up in ribbons. There's no problem in terms of any sanitary aspect, that I would be arrested. That's what happened 2 days ago. Now, I mentioned it at city council briefly in my speech, and I even actually shoved it through the door at one point because I felt so outraged that he would do this. But this kind of threats to use the police to arrest free speech behavior is a serious matter, and it is extreme. It shows a disposition not to allow free discussion, and his tendency, as I said, to change the rules around public comment, to cut off speakers he doesn't like. For example, at the last oral communications period, numerous speakers went overtime, but when I, the last speaker, came up, he would not let me speak. This has happened before. So he has what seems to be an arbitrary personal approach which ignores equitable treatment of people under the laws, the state laws, that require city jurisdictions to give people a fair opportunity to comment on public legislation. And that I regard as a very serious matter. So having said that, I will move on and hopefully continue to bring the issue up, as I like to do. Another issue I want to bring up, and the one that you may remember has been talked about here before, is that of Residente Unidos, the Latino tenant group, largely Latino. There are some Anglos, some English-speaking members. Going to meet again tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, out at the Beach Flats. Everybody's invited. The community is invited to 124 LeBrant Street. That's half a block from the Beach Boardwalk. This is the group, and you can actually see some letters beginning to appear in the Sentinel from them and in the Metro, that essentially told the Tim Fitzmaurice and Michael Hernandez and the city council to take its demolition plan, where they were going to demolish existing apartments, the Lee and Dolphin apartments, and stick it up their gazuga, that they were not going to provide the information they needed for it, that what they needed was guarantees that they could actually come back to real housing, not the fantasy of housing, not housing for some, not housing if Mercy Charities Housing decided you were eligible, not housing maybe if they decided to build the project, not sell the land to Canfield, not housing. In other words, they wanted it said that if their apartments were going to be torn down, that they wanted a signed contract that said you can first of all, we'll house you during this period of time, whenever the reconstruction is taking place, and we'll guarantee you get back into the new housing, and that there will be enough new housing. We have someone calling in.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, how are you doing?
Hey, sounds like that Scott Graham guy.
Yep.
Sort of scope it out, Scott, as I've insisted on calling you. So how are you doing, Scott? Have you been listening to the show?
Just the last little bit. I came in when you were talking about the mayor's unwillingness to listen to you.
Yeah, I don't know why the mayor doesn't like to listen to me. I mean, everybody likes to listen to me, right?
I was just looking at the Brown Act, and under Article 54954.3, subsection C, it says the legislative body of a local agency shall not prohibit public criticism of the policies, procedures, programs, or services of the agency, or of the acts or omissions of the legislative body. Nothing in this subdivision shall confer any privilege or protection for expression beyond that otherwise provided by law.
Well, wait a minute. That they certainly didn't talk to Mayor Sugar when they wrote that act.
And, you know, like you were saying, I witnessed it the other night. They cut you off in oral communications, gave you, all of 20 seconds or something? And then when it was time for the one thing about the Homeless Issues Task Force recommendations, which they omitted the entire camping ban from.
And rent control.
Right. Mm-hmm. A number of things were omitted, important items, actually. But first Sugar said, well, at the end we'll allow oral communications. And then a few moments later, Catherine Beyer said, well, we've already had the public hearing. We've already heard from the public on this, and so I think we just put it off for us to discuss it to a later date because it was so late and because we listened to so many people talk about it.
Now, let's kind of review what she was referring to. She was referring to action the City Council took on May 24th, what they held a special session on a Wednesday, started at 3 o'clock, where they took all these recommendations. They had a few county hacks who were sitting up there with them, supposedly to give them input. And they had about an audience.
What the county wouldn't do for the homeless.
Right. And the county, they were supposed to have the mayors of different cities and a council member, I mean, supervisor, Wormhout, individuals who had some real political power and a chance to make some changes based upon the actual recommendations of the Homeless Issues Task Force, of which they spent $10,000. In the audience were at least 40 or 50 people who were waiting to testify and to observe what was going on. Instead of allowing them into the process of discussion, Mayor Sugar declared they would have to sit silently for 3 hours while, he didn't of course tell them it was going to be 3 hours, but that's what it turned out to be, while these paid bureaucrats went through their recitations and their presentations, many of which were filled with false statements, self-serving padding. It was a farce. And I know when the chair, Linda LeMaster, tried to speak, she was cut off. And favored people, like Lucy Kinmetzer, however, were allowed to speak because these are people who have apparently the ear of the mayor and also seem to delight, and I have to say this even if Lucy's listening, in getting the favor of the mayor and somehow believe that that's going to produce better results. I know a lot of people have that idea, and I can understand how people would believe that's true the first 5 times, but after you get slapped in the face and given an enema the 6th time, it's time to say enough of this shit, as we tried to do with the Golden Porta Potty Award, but we're told to take our shit outside and, deposit it in a field because they wouldn't provide a porta potty. Anyway, all these people waited in the audience, and they had to wait 3 hours, and then I guess you said I wasn't even there at the end. I left. I was holding up a sign that kept saying, public comment, and of course I was ignored. Finally, Christopher Crone made a motion, as I understand it, that there would be public comment on each item, on an item-by-item basis, on the next, when the Homeless Issue Task Force report returned, and that was supposed to be either June 6th or June 11th. I'm not sure which. I think there was some... And it was supposed to return with priorities itemized by the mayor.
And I guess initially it was going to be by the mayor, the city manager, and Linda LeMaster, but Linda LeMaster got struck out of that. Some say because the mayor doesn't like Linda LeMaster and she's too radical for him. Some say because it's inappropriate to have anybody at the city manager and the mayor do it. But in any case, when it didn't come back on the 6th, it didn't come back on the 11th, it didn't come back on the 27th, it came back on July 11th. Actually, it wasn't June 11th, it was June 13th was the meeting it was supposed to come back on. It came back on July 11th, and on July 11th, there was no, in the agenda packet, there were no priorities mentioned. Just as in the sleeping ban, there was no specific set of statements from Fitzmaurice about what he was proposing.
Well, that was the thing, too. When Fitzmaurice was doing his thing, he had some draft language that he passed around to the council members but didn't make available to the public.
Right, and it was passed around at the very last...
Under the Brown Act, they have to make all the information they have in front of them available.
Wait a minute, yet another I'm going to have to start that thermometer going. Okay, ding, ding, there's number one.
The whole idea behind the Brown Act is that the public has a right to know and also comment on things. And our right to know supersedes their right to keep information from us.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's more convenient for them to proceed that way, you see.
Yeah, I understand.
So, I mean, I think your point is well taken. Fitzmaurice did not present the information that they were passing around to the public. For me, it's also important that they didn't publicize it with the agenda, so the people couldn't come to the meeting with any kind of informed sense of what they were doing. There was no, in other words, the staff report they provided was essentially an empty staff report, and it had nothing to do with what they discussed.
Right.
What they discussed was a very particular proposal by Fitzmaurice, which had the unusual and shocking idea that sleeping in vehicles, which had previously been heralded as the solution, is now going to be criminalized.
Right.
Whereas sleeping outside, which was previously regarded as barbaric and antagonistic to the community, is now going to be legalized. I mean, and they weren't even going to do it themselves because they wouldn't have the courage to do that, and they weren't even going to mandate that it be done by the voters if they voted it in because they don't have the courage to do that. Instead, they're going to call it an advisory proposal, which essentially is a way of buying off David Silva, and not even buying him off. I'm sure he's not bought off by this bullshit, but they claimed they were going to put his initiative proposal on the ballot. Instead, they're putting this aborted partial proposal on the ballot. But again, as you know, I stray, but the specific thing was that they didn't provide information about this in advance, just as the proposal, the Sugar's priorities were not provided.
Well, because they didn't want David Silva going into a tizzy. See, if he had that piece of paper in his hand 3 days in advance, he would have been going off on all these people.
Well, then they could have 5150'd him like they did before.
Right, yeah.
That's exactly what they did, by the way, for those of you who are just listening to this show for the first time and have picked up the news. David Silva was arrested and dragged off before a crowd of 30 people who were running after him. There was a lot of people who were outraged at this. And then he was considered to be a danger to himself or a danger to others. I'm not sure what. Of course, the minute the Dominican got him, they talked to him and they said, "You're sane as I am." And they let him go an hour later. But he was held in handcuffs. He was taken away. And this is the same. This is what happened to James Ney, although he didn't get 5150. He just got held in the back room and subjected to torture by television. He had to watch, I don't know, How to Marry a Millionaire or How to Make a Million or what's the show? I don't know what the name of it is.
Want to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah. So you want to be a millionaire. I mean, you know, it's incredible because I guess people see it on television or they see a part of it on television. You can't... It's hard, though, to feel the kind of fear that is created by that. I mean, I know an old hand like you who sits in the back and observes all this, as you observe hundreds of council meetings, can take a kind of a philosophical attitude. Even you seem somewhat outraged by it.
Well, I thought it was outrageous that they do it the way they did. I mean, they could have either done it as soon as he got there, but no, they waited for him to be there for 20 minutes, half an hour.
You're talking about David Silva's
when
they arrested him on June 13th.
Right. And then they waited for him to get up to comment on the Dolphin Lee project. And while he was waiting in line to speak, a cop asked him outside, and there was three more cops waiting out there, and they've started to handcuff him.
Sort of similar to what happened to me at the last council meeting. I was motioned outside by Sergeant Hennig on, I guess, 2 days ago, July 11th. And I should have known that when they do that, you take some people with you as witnesses. I went out there alone, and Hennig then told me, if you bring this, and it sort of was sitting out there, this ribbon-wrapped, gold-painted porta-potty, and it was a very lightweight, like 10-pound porta-potty, into the city council, you know, that will be illegal, and you will not be allowed to do that, meaning presumably I'd be arrested. And he told me this sort of off to the side, again, the same way David Silva had been told he was going to be taken away, as a sort of a, again, not any kind of public process happening, not any kind of law cited, not any kind of evidence of any kind of danger, just the council, or I would have to assume Mayor Sugar, didn't want that to happen.
Or Shadow Mayor Byers.
Or possibly Queen Catherine didn't want to have that happen.
She might have seen the Byers Beware flyer.
She might have seen, there was a Byers Beware flyer, and indeed, Byers, beware of Byers, no question. But again, you talked about the Homeless Issues Task Force and what they did. They were supposed to come back with a series of recommendations that would be voted on and discussed one after another, and where there would be public input on each recommendation. And Crone actually promised, and I think you were present the day before in the Cafe Pergolesi at his Monday evening session, that if Sugar forgot to do that, and Sugar sometimes gets rather absent-minded, then he would make a resolution to that effect. Do you remember that?
Right.
Of course, Crone did nothing of the kind. And when he was reminded by a written statement by Bernard Klitzner, another activist who left him a note, he still didn't do it. And, of course, there was no process by which they went through voting on each one of these without any public comment, one after another, a series of, each vote, I believe, was a violation of the Brown Act. And then at the end, they violated the Brown Act again by allowing someone to speak, because at the end of the evening they decided they would allow public comment. After they'd done all their voting, of course.
Right.
And after everybody had left, except for one speaker, Lydia Blanchard, the most patient woman in town, apparently. But you know what I was talking about when you called in, Scott, was Dolphin Lee.
Right.
And I was going to play some tape tonight, and I'd hoped to hear from Nena Ruiz, a Resident Unida spokesperson, was going to call in. Apparently, there's been some developments. I know she's planning a meeting of Residente Unidos. Two meetings have been canceled, last Friday and the last Monday's meeting, but there is going to be one tomorrow night. And I think there may be some changes in the wind. First of all, I note it's significant that there was nothing on the city council agenda on Tuesday. No new attempt by Fitzmaurice to kill the project. Instead, the city of Cecil Cirillo, the redevelopment agency head, has been pushing both the owners and Nena Ruiz to sell, and let building inspectors on the property immediately, or else they have this new artificial deadline, July 14th, the city has not been allowed to inspect the property, the city has not been allowed private audiences with the tenants, then they just can't go any further with the project. And of course, I think this put a lot of pressure on both Nena Ruiz and Julie, the local, who I guess is Vernon Lee's daughter, and who's the controls, or she and Vernon were negotiating with the city to let the tenants have at least 90 days to negotiate return and relocation guarantees, and also possibly building on vacant property, or possibly leapfrogging. Here comes one of those frogs right now. I hope he doesn't leap in my throat. That's the next talk show host coming into the studio, but we still have time. Anyway, so it looks...
Don't do talk shows, Robert.
He's talking on my time, too. What's going to be happening at this meeting tomorrow? Have you had any inklings of what's happening at the Residente Unidos meeting?
Well, I believe it's just to reconfirm everyone's willingness to withhold this information and to, I guess, you know, inform them first what giving the information up is going to mean, which means the city gets to go ahead with their project. They don't have to make any changes. They don't have to give any guarantees. And they don't have to build enough housing to house everyone that's living there currently.
Right, so they can just evict people, as I guess Catherine Byers originally planned to do. You heard her propose, quote, the buyout 2 years ago?
Right.
Catherine Byers, of course, is the same. He used the same process of saying, we talked about this a week ago with the Dolphin Lee Project back in October of 1999, to not allow any public comment on it when it was passed by a 7-0 majority.
Right, and that time... When they had the public comment, it wasn't about the Dolphin Lee Project, or it wasn't even about necessarily a project in Beach Flats. It was about low-income housing. And, of course, some of the topic was the Dolphin Lee and was a low-income housing in Beach Flats project. But none of it, I mean, the scope of the public hearing was just generally the city's low-income housing projects that they could do in the future.
Right, so they had the same bad process created this project, and of course then the city's process has gotten worse. Their own relocation advisory committee has rebelled, and so they've suppressed it. They haven't had a meeting of that in, what, a month at least? More than a month. Its last meeting was May 30th.
It wasn't tonight supposed to be their next meeting?
Could be. I don't think there was any meeting tonight that I know of.
But I think this was the second Thursday of every month.
Possibly so, though they didn't have one the second Thursday of last month.
Well, I know they canceled it.
Right. Good point. I think you're right.
That's what I mean. This is the regularly scheduled.
I think that's true. But I think what I'm hearing is that there's some positive signs. First of all, I'm hearing that the owners are going to stand. Well, the owner, I don't know about Terry McElroy, owner of the Dolphin, but I know that Vernon Lee, owner of the Lee, is, according to at least two good sources, possibly three, has decided, I haven't talked to Lee directly, to, one, freeze rents until the end of the year, two, not sell the property for at least the next 90 days and possibly for another extended period if the tenants and the city is negotiating in good faith with the tenants, not to allow city officials on the property, which, why shouldn't they allow city officials on the property? What's wrong with that? What are they trying to hide there, Scott?
Well, I think any landowner in town would be a fool to just invite or, you know, take up an, you know, once the city says, well, we want to come in and inspect your building, you know, any landowner would be a fool to allow that to happen. I mean, there's a process whereby they could come in and inspect one of the units if a tenant called them and complained about something. That hasn't happened, but now they want to inspect the entire thing. And the problem with that is that they could use what information they gather through those inspections to threaten a red tag on the owner and tell the owner, well, sell to us or we're going to red tag your building. Or they could just say, well, we're dumping the project, and then as soon as they dump the project, go down and threaten a red tag and tell the owner to clear the building out.
And to retaliate against people for forming Residencia Unidos in the first place.
And then as soon as the building's empty, they could eminent domain the place.
Which means all of a sudden
they don't have to do any relocation. They could force Vernon Lee to pay 3 months worth of relocation, which is, you know, very little compared to the 42 months the city would have to pay. So they could actually save a lot of money, you know, and plus it could be, you know, a real strong message to any of the unempowered minority groups out there.
Don't get empowered.
Yeah, including, you know, homeless people and punks or anybody else, you know, don't empower yourself or else we'll retaliate.
Well, my perception of what's been happening, because I read a letter, I guess Cecil Cirillo finally realized that she's been desperately trying to get some negotiating going behind the backs of the current negotiators, as I understand it, and she failed to do that. And I think what's happening now is that their July 14th deadline is being revealed as a bluff, that they were trying to frighten everybody into moving on this deadline, and people are saying, no, what's the reason? Are there funding problems, like funding deadlines, that we have to move by July 14th? The answer, as I understand it, is there's no deadlines till February for funding.
I think one of the deadlines may be that when they do these interviews with people to check out what their income levels are and how many people are in a unit and everything, there actually may be some deadline as to when they start that process and when they end it. And they started it and they got all the information on the people in the Dolphin apartments. And they've got, I guess, a few people in the Lee apartments, or a few units of the Lee apartments, they were able to interview the people. But the rest of the Lee apartments, they haven't interviewed them. So there may be an actual deadline there that they're not telling us about, because it would blow their whole thing with Michael Biotti, the guy I like to call Biff Nordstrom.
Well, I mean, but I'm missing any specific deadlines that would have any valid and legitimate purpose and
turn... Right, yeah, there's nothing like they're going to lose millions of dollars.
Right, if they were actually going to lose money and they have to proceed by a certain time, let's say, for example, there are deadlines for putting an initiative on the ballot that is August 11th, that, according to the city clerk, she has to get the stuff to the county by August 11th. So if Fitzmaurice is going to put his sleep on the sidewalks but don't sleep in vehicles deal advisory proposal on the ballot, it has to be in the city clerk's hands on August 11th to take over to the county. But if there's no legitimate deadline like that, I don't see why people should be pressured into precipitous decisions. And I don't think that Resident Unidos is going to be pressured. And I think it would be very helpful for people. I understand that some folks who have had experience with Mercy Charities Housing are going to be invited, like Carol Long, Linda LeMaster. Mercy Charities Housing is the is the person that the city has designated as the sole service builder and what do you call it, operator of this operation.
Right,
and they were rejected by the tenants, but the tenants are trying to say, look, you didn't provide us with any documentation as to what you were doing. Your eligibility requirements were weird and seemed to say that a lot of us couldn't come back. Mercy Charities came down, talked to the tenants over, I guess, a two-hour period. A little too long for my taste, but it was a long period of time. And I guess Nena Ruiz demanded of them some documentation, and I got a call today from Elizabeth Vogel, which was very, very surprising. She doesn't usually call me up for fun. She called me and she wanted to know why she couldn't get her faxing through to Nena Ruiz. Apparently she's trying to respond to some of the demands of Resident Unidos, which I think is remarkable. And shows that, I don't know if she is responding with anything meaningful, but the fact she's even discussing it shows that they're trying to do something.
Right, and the fact that she even called you.
Right, the fact that she would call me is, I should say, noteworthy. But I'm going to have to go now because my next talk show host is getting in
place. Not the talk show host.
Who are you anyway? You're a Lake Tahoe, he's got a strange shirt on, I'm not sure. He will identify himself when the time comes.
It's a news show.
He's a news guy, man. The man is full of news, and I've got the blues. So I'm going to leave 45 seconds early here.
Oh, don't do that, Robert. You should stay 45 seconds late. You're always giving him like 30
That's
seconds.
That's true. I'm always giving him a lot of rope.
Here.
Well, I want to invite people to return to, first of all, come to Residencias Unidos tomorrow. Come to the Food Not Bombs meal on Saturday and call Food Not Bombs at 425-3345 because Roar is also going to be the Food Not Bombs meal at the town clock, and we're going to be kind of meeting there. That's the campers organization. The show will return on Sunday at 11. Hey, you. Who asked him, man? I didn't ask him. 11.
We're on the schedule, Robert.
He's again, have you noticed this? He's just like sugar. He's constantly interrupting me. I'm going to have to call point of order here.
Yeah,
listen, I want to thank
him,
you.
Beat him with a brown egg.
I will beat him up in a moment, but I'm going to let him take over, and I want to thank you all for being with me today.
All right, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I am your let's put it this way, I haven't been around the studio for about a week. I've been off in the lands of the Lake Tahoe, and so anyway, that's where I've been. I hope you've been